Oh, good evening. We have so much light. It's just such a change. Beautiful change. So we have a new face tonight. Welcome. We should do introductions around. Say you're from
Carolyn,
Jeffrey,
Karen,
Charlene,
Liam,
Ellie,
Paul,
Wendy,
Judy,
and Angie. So, how did you hear about us?
I went to Everyday Zen once, but I live down here, so.
That's too far to go.
That's too far.
Yeah. Well, welcome. We are just at the end of this book, which is called Branching Streams in the Darkness, and it's talks that Suzuki Roshi in San Francisco gave to his Sangha about what we just chanted, the Sandokai. Like a box and its lid. In fact, that's what he's talking about this time in this chapter. He has his own flavor of mind in talking about this, which is very interesting in opening it up in his Japanese background and language, which is very helpful in bringing up the actual what the author actually was meaning by these clumsy English words that we've tried to throw into it to make it compute for us. So the name of this, the 10th talk, is Suffering is a Valuable Thing. That's what they always say about Zen. You know, your knees are hurting. Ah, oh, it's good for you. Be glad. But sometimes it's hard to take. We tend to want to be done with our suffering and imagine that we can be done with it. Imagine that there is some place where everything is going to be fine. Now and then we get a taste of fine. But it's all up and down and up and down. And yet, in this chapter especially, he's talking about for all the up and down, it is sustained by what we can't really talk about, but which we feel so powerfully as what holds us and lives us and breathes us, even as we live as protoplasm in a great big universe, a little piece of protoplasm running around in this little teeny world. And yet our experience is very different from that. Our experience is huge. And as we sit, our sitting practice gives us the sense of the hugeness of it, without having to name it, without having to identify it, not having to make it into something. Just let it be. And let us be. Let us be breathed as we breathe. Let us live as we're lived. So that's really the basis of what his talk is here. Each of the myriad things has its merit expressed according to function and place. Each of us, each one of us has, of all the myriad things, has merit. And our merit is expressed according to where we are. and what we're doing. And each one of us is a different place, and we're doing something different. That's what's emphasized for us in America, that we have to be individual and develop our individuality. But in this sense, knowing our place among the myriad things is a whole different matter. The individual is not alone. The myriad things, he says, include human beings, mountains and rivers, stars and planets. Everything has its own function, virtue, or value. He says, when you're listening to me, you're listening to my voice, but actually you are listening to the function of some universal entity called electricity that covers the whole world, the whole universe. So this is our one understanding. Another would be that you are listening to my nature as well as the nature of electricity. So when you see or listen to something, the whole universe is included. When we understand things in this way, we call it the understanding of Tai, T-A-I. Tai means body, but it is a big ontological body that includes everything. And we call the nature of that body Sho, not the Sho of these lines of text here, but the Sho that means the basic nature of everything. When we grasp that which is beyond words, we call that understanding Re, or truth. Re is something beyond our idea of good or bad, long or short, right or wrong. In the next line we have Yo, which means utility or usage. And Ko and Yo may seem the same, but here Ko refers to the function of things, while Yo refers to the function of absolute truth. In these two lines, Seikitu is talking about the oneness of Ko and Yo. Ko and Yo apply to each occasion and to everything. So when you encounter things, you should know that right there, the true teaching reveals itself. You should know that. This is to see things as it is. This is a very famous thing that Suzuki Roshi, Ellie heard him say it, because he said it a lot of times. Things not as they are, but things as it is. Meaning this, right now, in this place, in this time. Usually, even though you say, I see things as it is, you don't. You see one side of reality and not the other. You don't see the background. You only see things in terms of the phenomenal side of each event, and you think each thing exists only in that way, but it is not so. All things are changing and are related, one to another, and each thing has its background. There is a reason why all things are here. To see things as it is means understand that they are one, that distinction and equality are one, and that the application of the truth and the value of things are one, i.e., form doesn't differ from emptiness. Emptiness doesn't differ from form. We say two words, but we mean one thing. But when it comes together as one thing, it isn't so much a thing anymore. It's simply a truth that we live and are lived by. When we try to grasp it, it slips away. It's very hard. It's impossible to grasp, really. But just to know, and as we practice, we do know that it's just not only the stuff, but there's a connection to all the stuff that keeps the whole. I had an old friend who always said she didn't understand this at all about emptiness. And she always said, "This is my hand. This is it. This is my chair. Bam, bam." But then when she was dying, then there was her hand. And it was disappearing very quickly. And it became very clear that, oh, it's not like that. So we hold this lightly in our mind. Lightly because we can't really hold it tightly and without... I won't say destroy it, but hide it from our experience. The more we try to figure it out, the more we try to hold on to it, the more we're getting in the way. So then he goes on to talk about selfishness. That even so, our understanding is human-centered mostly, so we don't see or appreciate the true value of things. He said, most questions and problems are created by human-centered, selfish ideas. What is birth and death? That is already a very self-centered idea. Of course, birth and death are our virtue or merit. To die is our virtue. To come into this world is also our virtue. We see how things are going, how everything is appearing and disappearing, becoming older and older, or growing bigger and bigger. Everything exists in this way, so why should we treat ourselves in any special way? When we say birth and death, we mostly mean the birth and death of human beings. But when you understand it as the birth and death of everything, plants, animals, trees, it's not a problem anymore. If it is a problem, it is a problem for everything, including us. A problem for everything is not a problem anymore. It's just the truth. All of these questions come from a narrow understanding of things. And a wider, clearer understanding is necessary. You may think that talking about this kind of thing will not help you at all. For a selfish human being, it may be hard to be helped. But Buddhism does not treat human beings as a special category. It is deluded and egotistical to put human beings in a special category. Yet it's normal for us to think this way. When you look for truth outside, it means the background is not big enough. You need to find some confidence within yourself. Well, confidence gives us a bigger and bigger background. The more our self, it's contradictory really, because selfish doesn't mean you should get rid of yourself. and wipe yourself out and not be anybody anymore. This is about being entirely and completely and 100% yourself. To live as you came to live. To fulfill your life. Such as it is, with all its imperfections and mistakes. That's our human life. Just like the leaves on the tree, they all come and they live. And then they go. And if you think about it in those terms and look around, you see, it's happening everywhere. You see the new ones coming in the spring like this. So marvelous. Beautiful. See a newborn baby. Incredible. Miraculous, really. You can't even believe how that happened. But I went to the symphony on Sunday in the afternoon, and the people who love music and go in the afternoon are all very old people because they can't stay up that late at night to go to an 8 o'clock performance. And so the whole hall was filled with very, very old people hobbling along with canes and all dressed up and loving the music. And as Kogan said, he watched some old people doing walking meditation once, and he said, "Look where they're going. Look where they're going." They're on their way out. It's a beautiful sight. Roshi says, the next two lines are, phenomena exist like box and lid joining. Principle accords like arrow points meeting. He said, various things and events, including things you have in your mind, the things you think about, somewhat, something beyond thinking, beyond our understanding or perception. Again, relative and absolute. The thinking and the beyond thinking are the same, but we must understand them in two ways. Where there is the relative, there is the absolute. Like a box and its lid, they fit together. That I am here means that the true Buddha nature is here. That you are here means that the true Buddha nature is here. It's not somewhere else. It's not something to get, to earn, or to buy, or to find. It's to live with true authenticity as you yourself. He says that I am here means that the whole universe is here. Just as where there is a kerosene lamp, there is oil. He tells the story of the two arrows. There were famous archery master and another archer, and they were ambitious and they wanted to compete with each other. And so the archer waited for the archery master to come, and seeing him, he raised his bow and shot just as the master shot, and their arrows met right in the middle. Bam, just like that. They were so good, and afterwards they became like father and son. This is what happens in our life. This is what happens over and over in our life. It is how we meet each thing that we encounter. It's like two arrows meeting in midair. Our life itself is like two arrows meeting. So then he talks about suffering. Emptiness and somethingness are both necessary. Because we're human beings and our destiny is to live for possibly 80 or 90 years, we must have a selfish way of life. Because we have a selfish way of life, we will have difficulties that we should accept. When we accept difficulties, that itself is the middle way. Without rejecting your selfish way of life, you must accept it, but don't stick to it. Just enjoy your human life as long as you live. That's the middle way, the understanding of both absolute and relative. When there is absolute, there's relative, and when there's relative, there's absolute. Form is emptiness. Wherever there's emptiness, there's form. To understand difficulty in this way is to enjoy your life without rejecting problems or suffering. This is where we bump into things, because we always want our suffering to go away. To accept it. And yet accepting suffering, even physical suffering, you can experiment with that. It's very helpful to try it out. If you stub your toe and feel terrible about it, think terribly about it, dislike having a stubbed toe, hate the pain, it will be a lot worse. It will build all the way through your whole body. If you accept the pain, it goes away pretty fast. Pain is a very relative condition, depending on the state of our mind. When we're young, we say, oh, if this happens, I'll die. You know, if he leaves me, I'll just die. This is the worst thing. But actually, as we know, as we get older, it just keeps rolling on. And some things we like and some things we don't. But the more we can accept the things we don't like and embrace not only our own suffering but the suffering of others. We're all hurting together, but we're all full of joy together. We're full of our authenticity and truth together. So, are there questions? It's a wonderful chapter.
I was just thinking as you were talking about accepting suffering and just how much worse we make things for ourselves with stress.
Yes.
And can create so much more problems for ourselves with the stress of resisting situation.
Exactly. That's where stress comes from. Yeah. Exactly that. In the Bodhisattva vow, the Buddha's way is unsurpassable. Koban changed that to I vow to allow it. To the Buddha's way, I vow to allow it. And I think that word is very helpful. When we're very stressed, we can stop and let it be for a bit. figure out what to do rather than the sister-in-law went, ah. Everything was so awful. But we're all like that. Paul?
Reminds me of basic training when I was in the Army. Part of our training was physical training, PT. More PT from sergeant. And we'd run until we drop. And we'd do all sorts of crazy things. And the PT sergeant would say, you're going to come out of this either live and beautiful or dead and beautiful. And we didn't have time to stress about it because next week we had something else to do.
Yes.
So we just pushed right on through.
Yeah.
It worked.
It does work.
Yep.
It does work. Just keep on trucking.
That's it.
Yeah. Gate. Yeah. And if it's too hard, find someone to help. No, you can't do that in the Army so well, but I think in ordinary life that the best way is to find us people to help us and support us as we go. And not try to do it all by ourselves. I just don't think we can. Or even should, because if we try, it just gives us the illusion that we can do that, do it all by ourselves. And that isn't how life works. We're not alone in that way. Well, it's just about 8 o'clock. Announcements?
This Saturday, we're invited to meet at Connie Batten's homestead off Summit Road. And I've been sending out emails, and I'll send out another one. It's going to be a very nice day, and the wildflowers will probably be in bloom as well as her landscaping. So if you'd like the rural experience for a Saturday instead, please join us. If you would like to carpool, you could meet me. Let me know, and we can meet here, I think I said around 8:30. So I know Judy's coming, I know Ellie's coming, Karen,
I think so.
Are you coming, Carolyn?
I'm going to be out of town, so I'll miss it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Jeffrey, you think about it?
I have Poetry Center San Jose has got a membership drive, which I'm in charge of. So.
A membership drive?
I'm going to be at History Park. Well, we have it's a potluck.
Oh, okay. On Saturday, okay.
And I'll be somewhere else.
Okay, I just wanted to give Connie an idea of how we need to cook for.
So,
how far away is it?
It's about a 40-minute drive.
And when is it?
It's Saturday from 9:30 to 3:30. But if you want to join us for part of the day, that's okay. Yeah, have you been getting that email?
I sign up for a group, but I'll sign up.
Or you can give me your address directly.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful up there. It's a big meadow. And she's converted the chicken houses, which is a long strip of small rooms, into rooms in which she lives and shares space for different retreats of various kinds. And then the farmhouse is way back over here, and then it, in the background of the meadow is redwoods just forever. It's right up at the top. So the air is very, very fresh. And it's at this time of year, it's just beautiful. Such a good time to sit. So let's do our 1 minute sit.